internet, L. Ron Hubba Hubba. My name is Matthew Kroll.
And I got summertime ringing in my ears. My name is Shahir Dowd.
And this is the only podcast about movies, specifically a lot of them. The 2022 Oscars, but they're, I'm sorry, they're airing in 2023, but they're the 2022 Oscars, and it messes up my brain every time.
I feel like you haven't gotten over this thing that the best of the movies are done later.
Can't do it. And push through.
Because of that, there's a roll-on effect, which is that next year the Oscars will be around this time, and we'll do our best of around this time as well. Are you gonna be good with that?
It's the seasons, right? Like, I feel like all of the actual weather in the earth is pushing to a different time. It's just gonna slowly roll until the Oscars are all in October.
You know what it is as well. Just FYI, and this is maybe it's relevant to everything everywhere all at once. Is tax season in New Zealand is January to December, but in the United States it's April to April. And that kind of, you know, like that messes me up as well. But then the school seasons in America are also October through July, whereas in New Zealand, they're February through to November.
Huh.
So, you know, look, the world is cyclical as long as you get a year in there somewhere. One thing I wanted to point out, I logged off Twitter, Instagram, everything. I have not looked at any winners. I know nothing, Jon Snow. I don't know who won. I kind of got an inkling that perhaps one movie, because oddly, my email, I was working late, but my email sent a Reddit update saying the name of one winner. So I'm getting the impression that one particular film won out on a bunch of acting categories. But other than that, I literally know nothing.
None
of the time.
At all.
At all. None of the time. But you watched the ceremony. Give me a rundown of how it all went down without giving me any of the winners.
Sure. No. Well, I did what I've been doing the last few years, and I went to my friend Abby's Oscar party. She throws a gala event. It's, for whatever reason, the Oscars, this isn't for whatever reason, I can actually nail it down. The Oscars is like the Super Bowl. I keep calling it the second largest, well, actually, it might be the largest commercial in the world, but not the largest ad buy. Well, so the Super Bowl, I was saying this last night, the Super Bowl, the game isn't the commercial.
Right.
The commercials are the commercials, and the ad buys are way more there. But this show is also a commercial. And that's not a bad thing. It's just an interesting sort of, we've talked about the knock-on effect of like the good and bad of the Academy Awards and whatnot.
At any point, have we talked about how the Academy Awards actually got started?
Probably. We've done this a while.
Yeah.
But
so just for a recap, Louis B. Mayer started an organization called the Academy of Motion Arts and Picture Sciences, decided that in one way to prevent unions from forming was to actually allow the studio heads to get together and form their own collective, which then had a major award ceremony to give out to the talent in the hopes that that would deflate any process of unionization and collective bargaining. Now, there's a lot more to it, and it is rolled on into its own thing. We could argue in the context of something like, you know, the Baudrillard argument of simulation versus simulacrum. It is now a real thing, despite having started as like a, you know, ultimately a sort of a clever ploy.
Sure.
And it matters. A movie like Everything Everywhere All at Once, which I don't know if it's won, will receive a lot of knock-on effect for being categorized in the history of cinema as having won Best Picture that year. It is also a little bit like the what's the baseball league called? The World Series? The World Series, which involves no other countries other than America. You know, it's a little bit like that.
But you hear there's Best International Picture.
Of course.
And which also one of those was up for
Best Picture. Yeah, of course.
So it all makes sense.
It all checks out.
What I was saying, though, is I think the Oscars are best served with a group. And a group that cares. I mean, this is the dumbest thing, I guess, ever, but like, and a group that cares.
Right.
Like this is a group of something like, 30 people in a giant bar, like, that all gave a shit.
Do you care?
I care about the spectacle, and I cared a little bit this year about some of the, obviously, Everything Everywhere All at Once I really cared about. I cared about RRR. I cared about... It's interesting. I look at the Best Picture nominees. Mm. And to be honest, this year, there's not one of the Best Picture nominees that I did not enjoy.
Right.
And I feel like... I don't know if that's been true before in a while, or and I'll be curious. We're going to talk about previous winners and stuff like that in a little bit, and the cultural memory or the reverence that we may or may not have for any of those. I'll be curious if like this is a batch because it feels like one that I will remember more,
right?
Because honestly, even I'm trying to think of on this list what I enjoyed the least, mm-hmm. and that's a hard push, like.
I know you weren't a fan of All Quiet on the Western Front, right?
Yeah, I mean...
Or the Fablemans.
Yeah, I think... No, I mean, Fablemans is fine. Like, Fablemans was good. And for what both of those films were, they were very good at what they were trying to do.
Right.
It's funny. All Quiet on the Western Front is the one I connected with the least just because I'm over war movies, but that doesn't take away from the fact that it's an excellently made film.
Right.
I think the one that will probably hold up the least for me, oddly enough, is The Fablemans.
Okay.
Just from remembering what that movie was perspective. Because, like, even with All's Quiet, I can remember, like, beautiful, terrifying moments of it. I honestly can't remember many things that happened or scenes in The Fablemans outside the last 15 to 10 minutes or whatever that last bit was. So, I'm very curious if that'll ring true. This year, so all that to say, I feel like this year I cared more than I have in past years.
Okay.
And then, of course, obviously, last year's was so superseded by the slappening. I feel like has even poisoned further the, like, oh, what happened then?
So my quote from at the start of this was actually from Chris Rock's special Selective Outrage, where he refers to the what happened in the slap. It's a fine special, I think. You know, like
I didn't watch it yet. Yeah,
yeah. It's totally fine. I think it makes some salient points. It's amusing where it is, and you know, like his line is, "I still have summertime ringing in my ears." Drums, please. Mm. I'm curious. Okay, from a purely spectacle point of view, or an even sort of navigation point of view. Jimmy Fallon was the host this year.
Kimmel.
Oh, was it Jimmy Kimmel? Yeah. My apologies. What were the jokes about the slap?
I mean, so Jimmy Kimmel did.
Wearing a hockey mask? Did he come out wearing like a face shield?
No, he referenced it a lot.
Yeah.
Which I, you know, you hire Jimmy Kimmel, I feel like at this point he's going to go for the
I think anyone who comes in on that stage is going to have to.
Well, you're going to mention it, of course. I think Jimmy Kimmel has a way, and I don't even think it's necessarily bad or that he did a bad job last night. I don't. I think he did a fine job of finding that low-hanging fruit, and Jimmy Kimmel will, like, just keep munching on it.
Okay.
Like, it's just sort of his style. It kind of always has been, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just there's very little nuance to Jimmy Kimmel.
What were some of the digs?
So basically, he was talking a lot about how there's strict policies in place that if anyone in the theater commits an act of violence at any point during the show, I'm going into a direct quote here, you'll be awarded the award for best actor and permitted to give a 19-minute long speech. he also then went on to say, but seriously, the Academy has a crisis team in place. If anything unpredictable or violent happens during the show, please sit there and do absolutely nothing. Maybe give the assailant a hug like you did last year.
Bradley Cooper and a few other guys sank in their seat.
I didn't see any of them actually, which was hilarious. And then the what I liked about the swing around to the end of that sort of section of jokes, at least for that moment, was he's like, no, in all seriousness, we have a crack team of you know, people that are between you and me. If I say a joke that whatever, and he goes down the list, he's like, We got Adonis Creed here. We got Michelle Yeoh. We got The Mandalorian. We got Spider-Man. And it goes to Andrew Garfield. And you could, and the applause were slow because I think people were expecting
Tom Holland. Yeah.
And then he's just, Andrew Garfield just smiles real dopey. And then finally goes, and I got my right-hand man, Guillermo. And it shows Guillermo del Toro.
Right.
But then it finally goes to Guillermo from his show. And it was just, it was a really nice, like run down, run off of those jokes, at least for that. He kept, then he beat the dead horse throughout the presentation. But
did you enjoy the show?
Yeah, it was good. I like that, you know, again, low-hanging fruit, but always done very well. He always referenced show length.
Okay.
And made jokes about show length. Mm-hmm. I will say this, I'm going to get into minor spoilers here for you. We had not one, not two, but three appearances from Cocaine Bear.
Oh, wow. The Cocaine Bear was on stage.
The Cocaine Bear helped Elizabeth Banks do a presentation.
Nice.
On VFX.
Yeah.
Saying how if VFX didn't exist, the Cocaine Bear would look like this. And it was just a dude in a bear suit. Jimmy Kimmel wandered the aisles with Cocaine Bear. And then at the end, there was a very funny joke where when Jimmy Kimmel walked off stage, he walked up to a sign that says Oscars without incidents 000, and then he put a little ticker on it to 1, right. And there was this Cocaine Bear like standing guarding the sign.
Okay.
And I was like, what the fuck?
Cocaine Bear seems to be a movie that has come and gone pretty quickly.
Apparently it's not great.
The reviews were not strong for it. Box office was not strong for it. And I thought that was kind of a slam dunk in terms of like, almost that sort of snakes on a plane kind of, hey, this is an easy layup in terms of, as long as we land this kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't see it. The only other thing I wish I could remember, but I guess it wasn't that biting because I can't at the moment. Email us in onlymoviepodcast@gmail.com if you remember this. Somehow, and I always think about you and I think about my other friends who work in VFX. Mm-hmm. Somehow in every Oscars, while giving the award for VFX, before or after or around it, someone finds a way to shit on VFX work.
Yeah, there's a...
And Jimmy Kimmel was no different. After that, he goes, hey, to the winners, the guys that won, they said, hey, after the show, please let me know whatever TGI Fridays your after party is at. And I was like, why are... no one laughed. And it was just like... You were so close to the end of like actually get like Elizabeth Banks did a funny joke about Cocaine Bear and how Cocaine Bear would look like shit if not for VFX artists, and she went down other lists of like what was real and fake and things, and like even like Top Gun, she's like real planes still VFX, like like she did this whole rundown, and I was like oh wow, they made it the whole thing, oh, and they shit on VFX artists.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, and again, follow Todd Vasari on Twitter to kind of get more of a rundown of this, and he kind of goes through this in more detail. But maybe it's not the controversy, but I guess the stemming of this discussion kind of, for at least in my mind, I'm sure it went on longer, began around Ang Lee's win for The Life of Pi. Because the VFX house that did all the amazing work in that film, which inevitably netted Ang Lee a Best Director Oscar, the company Rhythm and Hues went out of business pretty quickly after and was under financial strife throughout the entire process of that movie, because VFX tends to get squeezed despite being such a critical component of every film that gets made these days.
Yeah.
I think as Elizabeth Banks pointed out, the controversy this year is that Top Gun's campaign for its Oscar run was really built around the fact that they did it for real, that they were real pilots, real planes, all that sort of stuff. But in fact, that movie is filled with a lot of visual effects. And, I think there's this weird feeling about the visual effects industry, and I think right now there's a push to unionize in the visual effects industry as well, that visual effects gets treated like a bit player despite being critical to the existence of the movie. You only have to look at the credits of any movie that's come out in the last 10 years, where the visual effects team, even for small films, usually makes up a lot of people. Everything Everywhere All at Once is going on a campaign of saying, we had five guys and we did all these amazing things. And I don't believe that is not true. But that movie is filled with visual effects and talent. And one thing that is also happening is the democratization of the tools of visual effects, which are changing rapidly. Again, the other people to follow on this topic is Corridor VFX,
They
recently made an anime film using AI. Now, it's a little bit of a misnomer because they're also a classic animation studio, I'm getting sidetracked, but in that argument of like the relevance of AI, it still requires the sort of procedural understanding that an artist has of how to make something. While they used AI to do it, their tool set changed. They still had to have a sort of a key understanding of how visual effects made. It is
we
true.
We should do an AI episode at some point because it's such a deep topic that has a trillion pros and a trillion cons in a lot of different ways. And I'd love to dive into that at some point when we don't have a whole award show to go over like that. It's going to change the way that computer graphics and everything has been using a form of AI or another for years, and now it's becoming such a cultural topic because it's just swelling and getting so advanced.
I'm using AI tools in my work now, and it's great. I obviously understand that the change is making people nervous, and I can understand that change as well. But I think to the Kimmel joke, which was tell us which TGI Fridays. It's true. The VFX people don't get to go to the glamorous award ceremonies. They don't get the money. They don't get honor and prestige that the actors get, for example, despite putting in much, much less work than an entire team does.
More work. They do more work than
the actors
the people
put in
that
less
do.
Work than the entire team does.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I got you.
That's not to denigrate any work of any great actors as well.
Which is amazing to me that like they still like in the one moment they're supposed to get a moment, they still shit on them in that moment consistently.
It's like
it's
audio,
strange.
It's like audio. Audio sound is always the last thanked, the most thankless role on set, It often, even though I think Francis Ford Coppola said something along the lines of 50% of a movie is the audio.
Yeah.
And we don't sort of take it seriously. It's always treated as an afterthought. You know, like whenever we're on set, I think there's another great Twitter, something like Sound of Set or something like that, where, we don't consult with the audio team whenever we're going to like shoot on location and we end up shooting next to a train and we want clear dialogue. So my point is we've always said this as well, is that there are a lot of people involved in the making of a film and all of those people are artists and critically acclaimed. Last week, I think it was the New Yorker ran an article the New York Times ran an article about like why you should sit through the credits of a film. Now, this in my friend circle stirred up a lot of debate because a lot of people, there's two sides to this, which is that, I can't believe I'm going to be quoting Vincent Gallo, but I'm going to be quoting Vincent Gallo who said many years ago, in terms of like the credits of a film, he said this thing, which was like, why do I need to know who the caterer on a film was? You know, like it has no bearing on what the film is I watch and maybe the same person throughout many, many different films. The New York Times article made the point that they sit through the credits because they want to respect the fact that a lot of people put the work in. I'm not exactly sure where I sit on this. I guess my thing is better wages, fair equity, sort of stuff matters to me more than whether you sit through the credits or whether the name appears in the credits. The credits is a traditional thing within the film industry as well. But it was like, look. Kimmel's joke will rub a lot of people the wrong way because we're in this period where VFX, for example, is just a rising, important, critical part of the filmmaking process and is getting treated not as equitably as other divisions of it and not sharing in the profits.
It's just such comedy is all subjective. Mm. It's just so interesting that like that's the choice to make a shitty joke punching way down at a group of professionals that is consistently punched down upon. So I was like, you could have just moved on. Like, it was just weird. But regardless, and it's funny, even sound gets a flowery speech and no one talks shit about sound like at the Oscars. So I'm like, I don't know. One other last thing about Kimmel, and this was, again, I'm going to slowly trickle spoilers for you.
Sure.
Shahir.
Yeah.
He brought up how what was it? James Cameron and Tom Cruise weren't there.
Oh, weren't they? Okay, yeah, they're working on other things.
No, he's like, you know, many people are going to think that they're not here because they didn't win, and you know, he's like, no one knows yet, blah blah blah. But he goes, you know, a show is too long when not even James Cameron can sit through it, which I thought was very, very funny. And then he finds it hard to believe that a man of such deep humility, didn't want to show up, and he does have a point. I mean, how could the Academy not nominate the guy who directed Avatar? What did they think he is, a woman? And I was like,
oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. So Jimmy Kimmel has a weird cadence of these jokes where you're like, I'm on board.
Yeah.
It was an uneven feeling show, but he hosted fine, and the show finished, so I guess he did his job.
Before we move on to the awards, I want to point out a friend of the show, wrote an article for a major news outlet, basically suggesting why one film, Top Gun Maverick, shouldn't win Best Picture, and it has to do with war propaganda and the relationship between American culture and America's war machine, I guess, is the way you think about it. And he was really... I was actually particularly offended by a lot of the comments that came back. You know, look, there's a thing here, which is that... and I say this every year when we do our Best Picture, our Best of the Year. Don't take it too seriously. The movies are important. The movies themselves are important. The awards are important in so much as they allow movies to be seen. But if the movie you didn't want to win didn't win, then so be it. And I think if we go through some of the Best Picture winners from the previous years, we'll probably see that it doesn't really matter. One of the most famous cases is Dances with Wolves winning over Goodfellas, which is the movie that we talk about more now.
Sure.
Over time. Last year, Coda won. Is that a film that, you know, we will discuss in great detail? I'm not entirely sure. I think you know my feelings about that that particular win. But Matt, I mean, have you thought about or revisited or, you know, think about Coda in a special way, given that it won Best Picture last year?
Oh, yeah. So before the show, you gave me the list of, what, the last six?
Yeah.
So Moonlight was 2017. I have thought about Moonlight since then. Shape of Water, 2018. I haven't, other than defending that I like Shape of Water to Jamie. Yeah. But I haven't, like, actively thought, like, discussion points around the Shape of Water. I just remember liking it.
Yeah.
Green Book, 2019. The only discussion that happens around Green Book is like, oh, really? Yeah. Okay, that's fine. Parasite, I've watched once a year since 2020, so a couple times since then, so I would say I'm still interacting with that particular film. Nomadland, 2021, I liked it. I don't think about it. And then, of course, Coda, 2022. I actually have, I've rewatched Coda once. Mm-hmm. Coda, it's so strange, but it does exactly what I think I want a film to do, and that is highlight an element of the world that I am not familiar with. Mm-hmm. And I think it does it in such a wonderful and understanding and even-keeled way,
yeah,
that while I don't think the film itself or its content is entirely spectacular, I think that what it is saying and how it says it is so important, and it does such an excellent job at it that, like, I think about Coda way more than I think about Nomadland, which again had an important sort of history and creed behind it, or Green Book or Shape of Water, to be honest.
Right.
So, like, I those are sort of my takes on all of the last ones. Do you have any sort of thought processes around any of those?
I think what happens is that when a film gets anointed as the Best Picture in this sort of like fake world series that we have, you know, it then gets entered into a pantheon of films of that ilk. And what we do then is we compare them against each other without the context of thinking about, well, it's an arbitrary decision-making process, and it doesn't really matter. And wasn't, you know, Ethan Hawke, who kind of talked to, who had that quote recently, where he says, you know, Americans, we have this thing where we've got to turn everything into the Super Bowl, when not everything needs to be the Super Bowl. And, you know, like, so on the one hand, when you put Coda up against a Parasite, for example, you know, the sort of conversation about, is this your best picture, kind of comes up. I have my feelings about it one way or the other, but I think my point is that there are ebbs and flows of the films that we think about as best picture winners, and whatever won last night, 2022's or 2023's, depending on how you number it, it is kind of, all it is a little snapshot, a little tiny capsule, and the best picture winner is just a little tiny capsule of the year in film, and there is so much richer material within that year to mine, and so much material outside of the confines of the Oscars to discuss. My feeling is that Moonlight and Parasite of those films that we discussed are the ones that really I hold up and go, yes, those were really excellent choices that highlighted both an important place in culture and an important point in the relevance of how those films operated. Are they the be all and end all? No, I don't think so. The year before Moonlight, Spotlight won, and I'm sure we've had many a discussion about.
We never talked about Spotlight.
About how Mad Max Fury Road may have been a more exciting win that year, even though I love Spotlight. So my point is, don't take it too seriously. People seem to be taking it seriously. And again, I'm pointing to my friend's article on a major news outlet. I don't want to call more attention to it because I think the debate around that particular film, or the debate around what this person's opinion was, is pretty toxic, and I really don't enjoy it, particularly because it gets very racist fairly quickly.
Right.
My point is, you know, like, we don't need to make it the Super Bowl. It's a great fun thing. It's nice to have some people win. I remember as well, I think it was the year that Pulp Fiction was up against Forrest Gump. Steven Spielberg took Quentin Tarantino and Robert Zemeckis out duck hunting or something along those lines. And he was just like, look, we're going to go through a year of campaigning where we're going to, you know, like, people are going to be like putting us up against each other. Just remember that, you know, we all made films. Those films were great. Those films are being celebrated. We get to make movies right now, and that's all that matters. And these guys, you know, just hung out and just like, you know, it didn't matter. So just putting that in context, you know, like when we get into this whole conversation about movies that we're going to get angry about in the next 5 minutes. Because if you tell me that All Quiet on the Fablemans won Best Picture, I am going to be livid.
It's funny. I'm going to trickle spoil.
Okay.
Top Gun didn't win Best Picture. Top Gun Maverick is the quintessential, like, it's a very good film. It is action packed. It is fun. It has cultural, worldly problems about it in its structure and things. That's fine. It also, due to the tenacity of the team and Tom Cruise and whatever, holding it not going on streaming, is seen as the movie that, air quotes, saved the movies. And however true or not that is, that's kind of the narrative. And I think it was great that it was nominated.
Right.
It's a nod to, yes, good job, movie. You did do something that is important to this industry. But you are not the best picture. I feel like that was kind of the that was the tell. I don't know. I enjoyed that placement of it.
Yeah, and recall, you know, again, our memory of these events are so short, but during the pandemic, the movie that really was the bellwether for how the industry would survive was Christopher Nolan's Tenet. I think there's a really famous video of Tom Cruise going to see Tenet in London while he was filming Mission Impossible 7 or something along those lines, with a mask on to discuss it. And I wonder if the decision to hold back Top Gun really was around what happened with Tenet. Now, Tenet was a film, you know, it has its share of fans. It's for me, I'm not one of them.
Yeah, talk about a movie I never think about.
Or I think about it a lot. I'm not a particular fan of that movie. And you know, look, and it seems that Top Gun has done what Tenet tried to do because of the way it was held out for a theatrical release. you know, great. Let's have a conversation. Should move.
I was just going to say, I'm just going to close up the Tenet thing. You know what Top Gun Maverick and Tenet have not in common? Mm-hmm. I can understand the dialogue in Top Gun Maverick. And the planes are really loud, so that's crazy.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so look, I will say straight up, I looked at your ballot. I didn't memorize it, Shahir.
Of course. I have the ballots in front of me.
I tanked this year. I voted with my heart and not my head. And it's not looking great for me.
I mean, there's a lot of these to get through. Let's try and get through them quickly without too much, unless we have something compelling to say about them. Should we start with the original screenplay at the bottom of our ballots?
Sure.
I'll read out who we picked while you pull up who the winner was.
All right.
So for the nominees for the writing for original screenplay, the nominees were The Banshees of Inisherin, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fabelmans, Tar, and Triangle of Sadness. I voted for Triangle of Sadness. Matt voted for The Banshees of Inisherin. Mm-hmm. And the winner was...
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
There you go. Both of us not nailing this at all.
Yep.
But a great great cab off the rank for Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Yeah, that was good.
Again, the Daniels, man. Music videos. Like, the crazy music videos. The farting corpse movie. And now, best writing screenplay Oscar for these two guys.
Yep.
How do they follow this?
I mean, with something equally insane, I think. We'll talk. Spoiler alert, Everything Everywhere All at Once won more than one Oscar last night.
And IGN, I think, has listed it as the most awarded film. Like, it has gotten more awards through the award season than Lord of the Rings at this point. So curious how that plays out.
Let's jump right to Adapted, because we're right here.
So the nominees were All Quiet on the Western Front, Glass Onion, Living, Top Gun Maverick, and Women Talking. I voted for Top Gun Maverick. You voted for Women Talking. And the winner was...
Women Talking.
Hey!
You didn't vote for... You voted for Top Gun Maverick over Women Talking?
I had a feeling that Top Gun Maverick... you know what I did there? Was I voted with my brain instead of my heart.
Oh.
And I lost. Because Women Talking won. So that is a plus one for Matthew Kroll. Because we change everything into a competition, by the way.
Yeah, everything is the goddamn Super Bowl. Hey, let's do best VFX. Let's
visual effects. I think this is in the bag for my pick, but maybe I'm wrong about that. Visual effects. The nominees were All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar: The Way of Water, The Batman, Black Panther: Wakanda Forever, and Top Gun Maverick. I voted for Avatar: The Way of Water. Matt, you voted for Avatar: The Way of Water. The winner was
the Avatar: is The Way of the Water.
It's in the bag. A lot of people I know worked on that movie, so I'm really happy for them that they won that.
I was saying at the party, I was like, could you imagine if Avatar didn't win?
Yeah, if you think about the sort of thinking of the. Of the filmmaking, of the voting process, I think that would have been the thing, which is that it's such an overwhelming visual effects movie that if it didn't win, even though, here's my controversial take here, I would have preferred Everything Everywhere All at Once winning that award.
Sure. Yeah. You know what I mean? What images are burned into my mind more out of those two movies? Everything Everywhere All at Once. But I'm not going to argue the technical acumen that went into making Avatar Way of Water.
Exactly.
All right, sound.
Sound, which is helping us get these voices to you. The nominees were All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar: The Way of Water, The Batman, Elvis, Top Gun Maverick. I voted for Top Gun Maverick. Matt voted for Elvis. The winner was...
Well, I actually wanted to say I wish I voted for The Batman. The more I thought about it,
sure.
That movie's sound actually, I think, carried a lot of it. Sadly, I was wrong, and it was Top Gun Maverick.
Top Gun Maverick. Okay. All right. Yeah, again, I actually don't disagree with your assumption that the Batman would have won. I didn't disagree that the Elvis could have won. Imagine if Batman's sidekick was Elvis, Austin Butler is Elvis. But Top Gun Maverick, I think the sounds of jet planes screaming through the air probably holds. And I also think strategically... This is the place a populist movie like Avatar: Way of the Water and Top Gun Maverick will pick up their awards. And, you know, typically what the breakdown that I've seen in the years that I've observed the Oscars is that these are the awards where the populist movies win and the prestige films win the sort of major prizes a little bit later. But they're still Oscars, you know? It's still Oscars.
I guess it is interesting how you sort of get the like, well, they're here, so they're going to. I mean, not to say that it's not an award winning film in that category. It is interesting how you can kind of use wrestling logic.
Yeah.
To kind of.
Yeah, the lower tier ballots. Yeah.
Yeah.
Short film, live action. Did you watch any of these, by the way?
I did not.
Okay.
I guessed.
The Le Pupil was the one that I picked because Alfonso Cuarón is producing that one. But the nominees, and again, I think a friend of ours, Michael Archuleta, actually watched all of these and had commentary on it. And I applauded him for doing so because this is, you know, for example, if you think about Andre Arnold, Taika Waititi, Nacho Vindaloo, these are people who came out of the Best Picture, Best Short Film nominees and then went on to have huge careers. So this is essentially where the new guard may come in and be a big deal. So we should pay more attention to these, and they tend to be relegated, you know, like not thought of because a lot of people don't see these movies. But the nominees were An Irish Goodbye, Evalu, Le Pupil, Night Ride, and The Red Suitcase. Michael Archuleta, by the way, he voted for Night Ride. That was his pick of the lot. I voted for Le Pupil. Matt, you guessed and voted for Evalu.
Yeah.
And the winner was?
An Irish Goodbye.
An Irish Goodbye. All of us were wrong.
Yep.
Well, no, all of us didn't see the movies.
That's true. I mean, we're still wrong. It could be both.
Yeah.
And then animated.
The nominees were The Boy, The Mole, The Fox, and The Horse, The Flying Soldier, Ice Merchants, my favorite title of the awards, My Year of Dicks, and The Ostrich Told The World Is Fake, and I Believed It. You voted for My Year of Dicks. I voted for The Boy, The Mole, The Fox, and The Horse. And the winner was
The Boy, The Mole, The Fox, and The Horse.
Apple TV pulling it out again. That was that was a crowd favorite at our house, and both in book and film.
Production design.
The nominees were All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar: The Way of Water, Babylon, Elvis, The Fabelmans. Matt, you voted for Avatar: The Way of Water. I voted for Avatar: The Way of Water. And the winner was
All's Quiet on the Western Front.
Totally agree with that. Totally agree.
Yeah, they did. It is good. It is good.
Totally agree.
Music. Original song.
Oh, boy. Was Lady Gaga nominated here? This was the one I think maybe you are most passionate about. And I kind of feel like this is a foolhardy award to not award it to the one we picked. So I'll be curious. The nominees were Applause, Tell It Like a Woman, Hold My Hand, Top Gun Maverick, that is the Lady Gaga nominee, Lift Me Up by from Black Panther Wakanda Forever, Natu Natu from RRR, and This Is Our Life from Everything Everywhere All At Once. Both of us voted for Natu Natu. And what won?
Yeah, it's Natu Natu. If it did not win, then I would say that the Academy is deaf.
No, it's also the case that, like, this was, it's like Avatar: The Way of Water. If this song didn't win, it would be an indictment on the Academy Awards.
Yeah,
right?
1,000%. So that
did they perform?
So it was performed. It was not them from the movie perform. Or like I couldn't tell because the camera was so far back. Mm-hmm. Like it was weirdly had very few close-ups.
Right.
And I was far away from the TV. I don't know. But I will say the way it's shot in the film is so frenetic.
Yeah.
And to see it in like long shots for a while felt a little different, but it was still amazing to see.
I wouldn't suggest that it was sped up in the movie as well, but I would say that the shutter speed of the movie was sharp.
There's a decent amount of cuts in there. Like,
yeah. So it's one of those things where the magic of the movie itself really highlight, you know, makes it beautiful and it's a beautiful process of filmmaking.
But there was a lot of calf strength on display.
Oh, God, I can imagine. my Achilles heels is wilting at the thought.
Yeah. But actually, original score, I found more shocking, but then I was like, oh, yeah.
Okay. So the nominees were All Quiet on the Western Front, Babylon, The Banshees of Inisherin, Everything Everywhere All at Once, and The Fabelmans. And I voted for Babylon, you voted for All Quiet on the Western Front, and the winner was
All Quiet on the Western Front.
Well, you won, so
I did, and the reason, it's funny, and when I wrote it, I did it very quickly when I was selecting these. I did it instantly. Then when I was looking last night before the award was given, I was like, wait, why did I do that?
It's
like,
a great score. Remember, it's got that sort of like symphonic, like that sort of noisy,
this is my point.
Percussion.
It's the only one that stuck with me. in my brain, I can hear that. And I can't hear the other ones. And I was like, oh, that's interesting that my subconscious was just like, yep, that one.
Great pick. So good for you.
Makeup and hairstyling.
Right now, by the way, you are winning 4-3 in terms of picks.
Oh, interesting. We'll see how that goes.
So makeup and hairstyling. All Quiet on the Western Front. The Batman. Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Elvis and the Whale. I picked All Quiet on the Western Front. You picked Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. I think money would have been on the Whale here.
You would be correct in Vegas odds. The Whale did take that.
The Whale took this, yeah. Because that's kind of the award that the Whale would win. Given the suit. I still have not seen the film.
There's something interesting here. Yeah. Three of the five nominees were for fat suits.
Weird. Yeah, I guess for the Batman as well, right?
It's strange.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a bigger conversation than we have time for here.
No, fair. Very good observation.
It's just weird, and I didn't like it. And yeah. I did not see The Whale, so yeah. I will not. I have plenty of people in my circles that have seen The Whale and have very, very strong feelings one way or the other against it, or for it or against it.
Yeah.
I don't feel qualified to weigh in because I've not watched it, and I don't want to sort of get into that conversation. One day, perhaps, but...
All right. Now, again, this is the category that I always say is an embarrassment of riches, and often, like short film, the short film nominees, doesn't get seen as much. And the running gag is always that the movies in this category are often better than the movies in the picture field. But the international feature film categories included All Quiet on the Western Front, Argentina 1985, which we have been requested to review, by the way. I just haven't done it yet. Close, and EO, the donkey movie, and The Quiet Girl. I voted for All Quiet on the Western Front. You voted for All Quiet on the Western Front.
Took it.
Quiet on the Western Front.
I do want to see EO. Jenny the Donkey from Banshees of Inisherin was at the Oscars.
Oh, man. Did her and Cocaine Bear
they never crossed paths. I think that I would worry that donkey would freak out.
Yeah.
Film editing.
Film editing. All right. The nominees were The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Tar, Top Gun Maverick. I voted for Everything Everywhere All at Once. You voted for Top Gun Maverick. And the winner was...
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah, there you go. Like it.
It's funny. Looking back, I was like, I think I tend to pick the editing film that you notice the editing the least and still feel like it flows super well.
Top Gun Maverick, Eddie Hamilton was the editor, edited beautifully.
I want to call out, though, this is something I didn't realize. Everything Everywhere All at Once, first editing Oscar to be won cutting on Premiere Pro.
Is that right?
Yep. Huh. So was super cool to find out.
Yeah.
Documentaries. Let's go short and then long.
Okay, short long is the short nominees are The Elephant Whisperers, Howl Out, How Do You Measure a Year, The Martha Mitchell Effect, and Stranger at the Gate. I have not seen any of these. I picked Stranger at the Gate. Matt, have you seen any of these?
Nope, I picked How Do You Measure a Year, but the winner was The Elephant Whisperers, which... Lovely. You know what's great when you go to a party about the
Elephant
Oscars?
Was there with Cocaine Bear?
The Elephant was there with Cocaine Bear and Jenny the Donkey. Yeah. It's always nice when someone who you... I was sitting next to some friends, Matt Thompson, who was on the podcast for The Best Of.
Yeah.
He was one of the people talking about that. And Matt isn't like... A movie person in the same sense I would say that like we are movie people, but he goes and sees films and enjoys them. But I was sitting next to him and he was so happy. He and his wife Isabel were so happy because they'd watched that one night randomly. They're like, it was so good. And
there
I was like,
go.
Oh yeah,
that's great. Nice. And like, hopefully again, the thing that happens is we tend to remember the winners, but in this list are just an embarrassment of riches of films to watch. And it would take us an entire year to go through all of these movies, and that's maybe what we should do. Documentary feature, the nominees were All That Breathes, All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, Fire of Love, A House Made of Splinters, and Navalny. Matt, I voted for Fire of Love, you voted for All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, and the winner was...
Navalny!
Navalny! I really wanted to see this as well, because I heard this had one of the most shocking moments. I was going to see it with a friend of mine who works at CNN, because it is a CNN-produced documentary. Excited to see it. I hear it has one of the most shocking moments. I also hear that All the Beauty and the Bloodshed is amazing. And the documentary about Nan Golden, the photographer, who I'm always really interested in. Fire of Love, it's the only one I saw, to be honest with you. And it's amazing. There's actually another Wim Wenders film about these two volcanologists that came out at the same time. So I'm curious to see both of them. And I know Fire of Love has been optioned to be made into a feature film right now as well. So we'll be seeing more of amazing volcano footage in the years to come.
Nice. Let's do costume design.
Okay. Yeah. No. We'll go to costume design first. So costume design. The nominees are Babylon, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, and Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. I voted for Elvis. You voted for Everything Everywhere All at Once, and the winner was
Black Panther.
Oh, fair enough.
Which I think was a really good call, to be perfectly honest.
Can I tell you something? We have not gotten a category right for about five or six categories right now.
Yeah, no, I'm circling them. I got it. What do we think now? We could do cinematography, animated, director. What are you thinking?
Yeah, let's go up cinematography, animated, and then typically we do director and then all the actors and then best picture. So for cinematography, All Quiet on the Western Front, Bardot, False Chronicles of a Handful of Truths, Elvis, Empire of Light, and Tar. I voted for All Quiet on the Western Front. You voted for All Quiet on the Western Front. And the winner was?
All Quiet on the Western Front.
Wow. That
seems
that is
like
a big win.
Pretty straightforward. Yeah.
That is a big win for that. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous movie.
Yeah.
Roger Deakins came out before the awards and said that the two most obvious nominees were not nominated this year, and his picks were for Greg Fraser for The Batman and Claudio Miranda for Top Gun Maverick. Roger Deakins, who has won this award and has been nominated several times over, suggested that those two should have been nominated in this category.
The Batman has such a striking visual style, and it's actually hyper impressive to me because it's a very dark film that also I can see everything that is going on.
Yeah, it's an amazing looking film. But I don't disagree with All Quiet on the Western Front, by the way.
No,
I think
that's
a gorgeous, gorgeous movie for such a terrible, terrible story. Animated feature film. This is what I'm looking forward to. I think I got an inkling of who won this last night, but the nominees were Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, which has just hit Peacock, by the way, and I'm going to watch that, The Sea Beast, and Turning Red. Matt, you voted for Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, and I voted for Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, and to win it was
Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
Pinocchio. All right.
Can't be mad at this. This is really, really great.
It is really, really great.
It's funny. Again, I would go with Marcel just because it had a more of an emotional punch for me, but that's just a personal choice.
Yeah.
You know what I loved, though?
What?
I didn't think it was going to win, but I loved that Turning Red was on here.
Yep. Great movie.
I really, really like that. I've not seen The Sea Beast. And Puss in Boots, I definitely want to check out as well. They did, Antonio Banderas and Salma Hayek presented some stuff last night.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, A, fucking vampires. B, it made me want to watch Desperado again.
I'm curious how Desperado holds up because for me, it kind of hit the right notes when I, you know, like really
in
action movies. I'm curious now how it works. But I do so my son has recently taken up guitar and I played him the opening of Desperado, you know. I played him that song just to like, hey, this is what a great guitar player sounds like. And then I was like, and that's the voice of Puss in Boots.
Well, he didn't play that technically.
Yeah. And then I was like, that's why I was like, that's the voice of Puss in Boots. That's not his voice right now.
I think he actually, email me in, onlymoviepodcast@gmail.com. I think Antonio Banderas sang, but didn't play the guitar.
Okay.
I think that's how it went. But no,
because there is a band that was known for that song.
I don't know. Tell us.
Directing.
Yes.
The nominees were Martin McDonagh for The Banshees of Inisherin, The Daniels for Everything Everywhere All at Once, Steven Spielberg for The Fablemans, Todd Field for Tar, and Ruben Östlund for Triangle of Sadness. I voted for The Daniels, Everything Everywhere All at Once. You voted for Todd Field for Tar, and the winner was
Daniels, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Hey! Oh my God, those guys won?
Yeah, what?
That is amazing.
Crazy.
Again, the career trajectory of those two guys, incredible. And they won against Steven Spielberg.
I know. They commented a little bit about how crazy that was. It was quite nice.
Yeah. That's wonderful. All right. Shall we jump into the actress category where I think I've seen a few of the winners here. But let's go with actress in a supporting role first up, just because it's on my list in this order. Angela Bassett for Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Mm-hmm. Hong Cho for The Whale. Kerry Condon for The Banshees of Inisherin. Jamie Lee Curtis for Everything Everywhere All at Once. And Stephanie Hsu for Everything Everywhere All at Once. The winner, I picked Angela Bassett. You picked Stephanie Hsu. And the winner was...
Jamie Lee Curtis!
Jamie Lee Curtis! Is this her first Oscar win?
Yes, from my understanding.
Look at that, for such a long-storied career.
Look, I love Jamie Lee Curtis. Yeah. I'm very happy she won. Mm-hmm. This is a weird thing to say. Stephanie Hsu's performance in Everything Everywhere All at Once, I feel like, is at the same time the most in-your-face and the most subtle and the most different feeling, like, flavor of character out of all of the characters, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I feel like that film, I feel like she was a keystone in that film. Mm-hmm. And I've been a little bit disappointed that she hasn't been getting the same, like, love across the board as every other cast member, it seems.
Yeah.
I get it, though. Like, I you know, there's the whole, like, oh, she's very young and da-da-da, and, like, that, you know, that, sure. But, like, when I think about that movie, I think about Stephanie Hsu before I think about Jamie Lee Curtis. Like, and again, this is a personal me thing, and no yeah. slight to Jamie Lee Curtis. She's one of my favorite actresses. She's just such a fucking cool, yeah. wacky lady. But, like, I don't know. I voted with my heart here, I guess, and I was a little disappointed. I'm not gonna lie,
a little disappointed. But you know what's funny is that I've been trying to actually tee up a time for my wife and I to watch Everything Everywhere once. I was gonna watch it on Saturday night, using your disc, and unfortunately the disc was still in your PS4.
Still in my PS4. Sorry
but,
about that.
No, it's totally fine. I'm very curious how my wife responds to this movie. I don't know whether she, like, it's a complete 50-50 whether she will freak out and think it's amazing or whether she will hate it. I don't know if there's an in-between for this movie for her.
The movie does such a great job at lulling you into a, not even, we'll call it a false sense of security, just like an emotionally warm slash, like devastating blanket in right. the beginning. And then the wacky stuff happens. And it's almost like, even if you're not into wacky stuff, you're so kind of like a little sad or sad enough where you're like, oh, thank God something wacky's happening right now. Like, it's a really good roller coaster.
I'm not, this is no slight to the movie. I just don't know if this brand of wacky plays for my wife. I don't know. Very curious to find out. All right, actress in a leading role. Cate Blanchett for Tar. And I've said this a million times. If she didn't win, she should run out and tackle the winner. Anna de Armas for Blonde. Andrea Riseborough, controversially, for Two Leslie.
So silly.
Michelle Williams for The Fablemans. And Michelle Yeoh for Everything Everywhere All at Once. I voted for Michelle Yeoh. Yeah, Matt, you voted for Michelle Yeoh. The winner was...
Michelle Yeoh!
Yay! Yep.
No, she didn't tackle her. I think if any of the other winners had won other than Cate Blanchett probably would have taken them. But I don't think she wants to tangle with Michelle.
No, you don't want to miss Michelle Yeoh. Yeah, there's a part of this... It's a great movie, great performance. Also recognizing an incredible talent that's been around for a while. That has been just delivering it, and it's just amazing to see. So good, yeah. Yeah, good for her. Mm-hmm. Actor in a supporting role. The nominees were Brendan Gleeson, The Banshees of Inisherin, Brian Tyree Henry for Causeway, Judd Hirsch for The Fablemans, Barry Keoghan for The Banshees of Inisherin, and Ke-Huy Quan for Everything Everywhere All at Once. I voted for Ke-Huy Quan. Matt, you voted for Ke-Huy Quan, and the winner was...
Ke-Huy Quan!
Ke-Huy Quan! Yay! Yeah,
Everything that Everywhere was kind All of once. A given, I feel.
What's that?
I said that was kind of a given, I feel. That's if you pay attention to any of this stuff, that feels correct.
Now I'm just going back over the list here. Everything Everywhere All at Once is the most winningest film across the board.
As of right now, it has
six wins
in the announced things. We have leading role and best picture left.
Yeah. All right. Good. Go actor in a leading role. By the way, there is this ongoing discussion where they should combine actor and actress into the same category, because it does not matter your gender whether you know, how this differentiates itself. And I kind of think that's true. Austin Butler for Elvis, Colin Farrell, The Banshees of Inisherin, Brendan Fraser for The Whale, Paul Mescal for Aftersun, and Bill Nighy for Living. I voted for Colin Farrell, The Banshees of Inisherin. Matt, you voted for Brendan Fraser in The Whale, and the winner was...
Brendan Fraser in The Whale.
Whoa, the divisive movie.
Nothing like, I think Kiyu Kwan and Brendan Fraser were both in Encino Man, so it's really nice to see
that's true.
That they both...
This is a poorly timed, this is a poor joke that I know is wrong, but it's...
Then why are you going to say it?
I was like, well, I was just going to play on a comeback story, but a humpback story, The Whale. Just because of play on the words The Whale. Okay. Anyway, okay. That was terrible. I apologize profusely for it, and I know I've done a bad thing. The nominees for Best Picture are All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar, The Way of the Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, The Fablemans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, Women Talking. Now, Matt, when we did our best films of the year list just a week ago, I picked Women Talking as my favorite film. Mm-hmm. What was your favorite film? Was it
RRR.
Oh, it was RRR. Mm-hmm. Both of us picked Everything Everywhere All at Once as our Best Picture winner.
And the winner of Best Picture for 2023 in the Academy Awards goes to... Avatar, The Way of Water. No, it's Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Seven. I believe it won 7 awards. Is that correct? Let's do some math here. One, two. Picture, director, screenplay, actress, supporting actress, and best film editing.
Wait a minute. So did it win? Say that again. It won screenplay.
Picture.
Director.
Screenplay.
Yep.
Original. Actress, supporting actor, supporting actress, best film editing.
Wow. So typically there's been this thing, I think only a couple of films have done this, where they've won what they call the Big Five. And the Big Five are actor, actress, director, writing, picture. Mm-hmm. And there may have been one that's done this since then, but I know that One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and The Silence of the Lambs were the two films that were the Big Five winners. But... I will say Everything Everywhere All at Once won supporting actor, supporting actress, and actress, mm-hmm. plus director and writing and picture.
And editing.
So kind of won a big seven.
Yeah. It's actually only the third movie ever to take 3 acting Oscars at the same time.
Okay, what were the other two?
Which is Streetcar and Network.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah. So
that's great. That's great.
It was very, very cool. I wouldn't want this to happen sort of any other way.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. This is where the I won't say sadness, but the little bit of a bummerness kind of comes in, because the other films, to be honest, like, had no chance. Like, it's so strange to think that, like, Banshees, Tar, even Fablemans to some degree, like... Women Talking, although I'm so glad Women Talking won for screenplay.
Yeah, that's great.
That was a movie that lived and died on that screenplay, and they
my best film of the year.
so like, I don't know. It's one of those bittersweet things. Like, I wanted Everything Everywhere All at Once to win all of the things, but that also means that a lot of movies that I really loved don't get to win the things.
So I think the thing here is that. I don't think, like, looking back at the list of movies that we had for our Best Picture winners in previous years, we had Coda, Nomadland, Parasite, Green Book, The Shape of Water, Moonlight, Spotlight, Birdman. Actually, what I was about to say is incorrect, because Coda is a first, I believe it's a first film, or if it's not a first film, it's a very young filmmaker. Nomadland is a third film from a filmmaker. Parasite is obviously a very storied one. And Moonlight was a second or third, I believe it was a second film from Barry Jenkins. So I was going to suggest that this is very odd because it's a sort of a young... Everything Everywhere All at Once feels like the youngest movie to have ever won Best Picture. That's not necessarily the case, and that is a feeling more than an accuracy.
It's the hippest movie.
Yeah.
The young kids are saying hip still, right?
Yeah. Maybe the last time I can think of a film that did that was maybe Midnight Cowboy, John Schlesinger's film. Mm. you know, which was an X-rated or R-rated movie that won Best Picture at the time. Again, coming from the world of music videos, the Daniels are heroes to me in everything that... in everything, everywhere, all at once. But in everything that I do, I think the Daniels are clearly influenced by Michel Gondry, and I am influenced by both of them. So it's amazing to watch their work and to see how far it's gone. I worry about the follow-up, just in terms of, like, you know, these careers are built on being able to follow something like that and you know, create, you know, like Spielberg continually, you know, it remains relevant over such a long time.
Yeah.
So it's going to be an interesting thing to see happen. I love it. I love it. I love it. Yeah. I love it. It's great.
Yeah. The overall, I was very happy with these awards. I don't think I'd ever watch the Oscars by myself. It's too fun to sort of have these sort of shared experiences, celebrating films that we had connections with. Actually, it's funny. I was seeing all across Twitter, it was nice to sort of see what all of our film friends were kind of doing. I know you turned off Twitter, but the Izzy and Princess went to, like, it seemed like some special screening at the Nighthawk, and like other folks just tweeting from where they were and just like being with a lot of different people. It makes I love the act of I guess it's what makes going to the movies fun, is like going with a lot of people and seeing people have the same emotional reaction.
Yeah.
And it's just really lovely. The party I was at, it was fun because, like, some people were real Top Gun people and other people were real Everything Everywhere All at Once people. And it was odd. The cross section didn't meet a ton, but it was neat to have that sort of like sports game cheering for various things. And, I don't know, it makes the discussion of talking about movies year round kind of, I don't know, just a nice little button, a nice little dollop of whipped cream, despite the fact that it has zero valuable caloric intake. It's just tasty and good, and tasty. I like it.
Next week, we're back to our regular programming. And by the way, just before we go on to that, the other thing that Everything Everywhere All at Once kind of refuted, and again, it's an A24 film, so maybe the marketing push behind it just, again, from a the business of the award ceremony kind of process, mm-hmm. A24 played this massively. They've done this before. They are, it's sort of wrong to sort of equate them in this way, but they are the Miramax of our generation at this point, in terms of like being able to campaign for a movie so effectively that it wins Best Picture. Not to say it's undeserved, by the way, not suggesting that at all. But remembering that Everything Everywhere All at Once came out so early in the year, and that is usually not the time that a Best Picture nominee will come out. And if you look at the other Best Picture nominees that came out, they were all much, much, much later in the year,
yep.
kind of targeting themselves for a release because they felt they were awards contenders. And Everything Everywhere All at Once was not considered that way and was released so early in the year, but managed
March?
To sustain and was such a cultural phenomenon. Yeah, I believe it was March or April, something like that, very, very early on.
Turning Red was super early too, which is why, again, I was really happy to see it on the list.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So we are returning to our regularly scheduled programming. Perhaps Scream 6, our next movie, will be a Best Picture nominee
in
2024.
You never know. You know who's going to know is guest on that show, Chelsea White. She's coming back. She is a Scream aficionado. What a delight with Chelsea White we will be. Looking forward to that. That's coming down the pipe. And then we're just going to keep on trucking, giving you all the hot cinema action that you come here to listen to. Any final words on the Academy Awards?
Other than, man, it is stressful to like try and not know what's happening in the Academy Awards. Like, because I need my social media platforms for the work I do, to be honest with you. Like, and I was working till 11 p.m. last night. And so it was stressful to be like, okay, I got to avoid this. In fact, even you sent me a clean feed link this morning to, like, log us into the thing. And I was like, oh, God, I know when I open up my email, there's going to be some headline that says what won. And it's going to spoil everything. So I had to, like, I did this thing, which is I opened my email squinting just looking for your name, and like just looking for your name, and then I clicked away very quickly. I haven't looked at my phone. It is a really stressful thing to try and not see the awards.
Yeah, well, we could start our days now.
Yeah.
Everyone, if you're listening to this, we recorded it this morning. If you're listening to it on Monday the 13th,
and I'm already late for work.
Yeah, same. So we're gonna get out of here. We'll get this up to you as quickly as we can. And until next week, keep on hunting those golden statues, everyone.
Everywhere.
All at
once.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.